Welcome to Hot Flashes and Cold Topics podcast, the voice for women in midlife and beyond. At Hot Flashes and Cold Topics, we talk about anything and everything to do with midlife. My name is Bridget.
And I'm Colleen.
And our guest today is Dr. Linda Onagawa. And Linda Onagawa is the chief medical officer for Noom. She also has spanned over 20 years in academic primary care, bariatrics, leadership in digital health startups, and she is certified by the American Board of Obesity Medicine. So we are very happy to have her. And this isn't just about Noom, although Noom has worked for me in the past year. I lost 30 pounds. I'm keeping it off. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, but we're also going to talk about this time of life and how weight is such a big issue for women. We get so many questions from our
listeners.
The number one question. I think second is hot flashes and night sweats, but then and third is sex, low libido. But the number one is this weight gain that is happening during this time of life. And we're talking to her about why this happens to women in midlife. Really, you cannot blame yourself. It's kind of a physiology and what's going on in your body and what's happening naturally in this life. So let's stop blaming ourselves for what's going on in our life, but what we can do to help curb that, to help with those issues.
And it's so entwined with your emotional and mental health, especially in this time of life that, you know, there's so much guilt surrounding it. And we don't really touch on the topic of medications. This is more about your metabolic health. She talks about metabolic syndrome and how we can address the proteins you need and what type of exercise. This is more of a holistic approach. There are obviously, we've had episodes like Dr. Heather Hirsch about Ozempic and Wegovy, but this is really talking about I'm in midlife, I'm going through menopause, I'm doing everything I normally do. I eat the right ways that I've always done, I exercise, but my body is changing and I'm getting this stomach that I never saw before, and that's your visceral fat she'll talk about, and how everything, sleep, mental health, it's all intertwined. So it's a really good conversation.
I love too that she said to take the BMI measurement with a grain of salt.
You can't look on a blank chart on the internet and say, okay, I'm 5'4", because your body is different. Your structure is different.
I mean, I told Colleen my boobs alone weigh 20 pounds, you know, at least 10. So look at me. So, you know, it's amazing. But it is great to talk to someone who is compassionate in this area. And that is something
and
that
knows
really
who knows so
knows,
much. You
know? She knows about this and why this is happening. And also, we don't want you to forget that if you are in the New York City area, April 27th, Conversations with Prime Women is happening at Penn 2 from, is it 11 or 11:30?
Yes, it's 11:30 to 5. 11:30 starts opening up the shops and checking in and everything. And then we have four panel discussions. We have boss ladies with some incredible women. Well, incredible women on every panel. I'm not going to say that each time, but it's incredible women on the boss lady panel, incredible women on the women's health and longevity. And then we have such cool women joining us for tea time with Prime Ladies. And the final panel is changing the narrative. So we are going to be talking about just what's going on in this time of life and how we can get ourselves really focused on empowering the next chapter of life. So it's going to be fun. You're going to make friends. You're going to have ridiculous gift bags, guys. Like literally, I'm having trouble getting all the stuff in the bags. but you don't want to miss it. Tickets you can find either on conversationswithprimewomen.com or on eventbrite.com. So with that being said, let's talk weight, Bridget, our favorite topic, let's talk about weight gain, loss, and what's happening to our bodies in menopause. We'll talk to you after.
Welcome back to Hot Flashes and Cold Topics, everybody. Today, we are thrilled to have on Dr. Linda Onagawa, and she is board certified in obesity medicine and internal medicine, and she is the chief medical officer for Noom.
Oh. Welcome to the show.
I want to also thank both of you, Bridget and Colleen, because, you know, menopause, I think, is still regarded as so taboo. And something that is not cool to discuss, yet it is a natural part of our lives. It's something that we all go through as women. And my own personal philosophy is the more we know about the transition, the more empowered we are as we go through it. And it is not for the faint of heart. I know that from my own personal experience as well. So I applaud you for having this community as a forum to bring these topics to the forefront that everybody's thinking about but might be afraid to ask. So
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We have really learned so much through this community and met so many people, but we really had to seek out information. You know, one of our biggest questions. And we have a Facebook group, and that is something a lot of women, especially when they're starting, when they're in peri and they're starting to go through this, they're like, what is happening to me? Why am I putting on this weight when I've done everything I used to do?
Oh yeah, right. They're eating right, they're exercising, and yet it's still happening. So let's talk about, like, first what menopause really is and what happens, right? So as you know, probably, menopause is characterized by a reduction in your body's estrogen levels. Now, estrogen as a hormone, you know, we tend to think about it as the hormone that, of course, is responsible for our reproductive cycles, and it plays a huge role in reproduction. But estrogen does a ton of other things for our bodies. It improves our fasting insulin levels. It improves the way our body handles blood sugar. It improves the way our liver responds to insulin. It prevents lipid accumulation in the blood. It reduces oxidative stress. And men have estrogen too, and it does all this good stuff in their bodies. They just have less of it too. It improves the function of our hearts. It protects our brain from the impact of aging. It inhibits remodeling and reduction of our bone mass, and lots of other things, but those are some of the big ones. So as we age and our estrogen drops, a couple of important things happen that both lead to weight gain. So the first is that we are predisposed during peri and menopause to gain more visceral weight. So what that means is we're more likely to deposit weight around our midsection. The big deal with that is those visceral fat cells are more likely to function in a metabolically abnormal way. Like, many people don't realize it, but healthy, normal fat tissue in our bodies serves a very important purpose as an endocrine organ. It even makes estrogen, right? It makes lots of vital hormones. So when we have more fat deposited in the midsection and that fat starts to behave abnormally, we call this adiposopathy. That's a mouthful, but it loosely translates to sick fat. And it means that this fat behaving abnormally worsens inflammation in our bodies, it worsens oxidative stress, and it drives even more fat accumulation. Okay, so that's number one. The second thing is we also begin to lose our lean body mass without the protective effects of estrogen. And that includes muscle mass, that includes bony mass. And this means more of our body's composition is going to shift towards adipose tissue. Okay, so that's a problem. Then, of course, we are not sleeping well anymore, right? We're having nighttime hot flashes. And that lack of sleep due to the hot flashes can lead to chronically higher levels of cortisol, which fosters more weight gain. And the other things that boost cortisol in our lives are kind of the more external stressors of menopause, right? Like we're juggling parenting teenagers with caring for our aging parents. We've got mid-career pressures. There's just so many things going on. So what this all amounts to, the increased visceral fat, the reduction in lean mass, the excess cortisol can all lead to a condition called metabolic syndrome. And metabolic syndrome typically is associated with progressive abnormal weight gain, more hunger, and you basically get on a hamster wheel that is very, very difficult to get off. So that's at the root of why women are gaining weight. It's not because you're weak or you're doing the wrong things or you don't have the willpower. It is very, very simple biology.
It's so important for our listeners to hear that it's not their fault, because we get constantly asked, what's happening? My metabolism is not the same. I eat the same. I exercise the same. Can you talk a little bit more about the metabolic syndrome and, like, are there certain factors that you can check off? Do you have three of these five or five of these eight that women should be considering?
Absolutely. So the classic definition of metabolic syndrome, it actually differs between different specialty societies. It generally includes things like abnormal triglycerides, so high triglycerides, low HDL or good cholesterol, abnormal blood sugar, abnormal blood pressure, and a waist circumference that's over a certain point. I actually have a little bit more of an expanded definition of metabolic syndrome. You know, I look at in women something called a HOMA-IR score, which is a ratio of fasting insulin to the fasting plasma glucose. And what I find in women is that that HOMA-IR score can often become abnormal before anything else does. So it's a great early indicator that you are potentially insulin resistant and at a higher risk for the metabolic syndrome. So it's a test that I always recommend doing. And, you know, many times I have women come to me as an obesity specialist and they say, well, I saw my doctor, they did a glucose and an A1C and they said, I'm fine. I don't have pre-diabetes and I don't have diabetes. But that's not the whole story, right? We want to be able to pick up who is at risk for these metabolic problems before the horse is out of the barn. Because like I was just explaining before, when you're on that roller coaster, that cascade of biological effects that are happening, it is so difficult to get off the train. It can be done, but it's definitely harder than working from a more preventive approach. And, you know, one of the things that I also think is so important too is women in their 30s, right? Women maybe in their early 40s who are not quite in the perimenopause yet. When I hear that there's a family history of weight gain, when I hear there's a family history of hypertension, diabetes, other metabolic disease, if a woman has had gestational diabetes or she's been diagnosed previously with polycystic ovarian syndrome, all my alarm bells are going off, because I know this woman, when she enters peri, she is going to become high risk. And that risk is only going to increase throughout the rest of her life.
So how do you do this testing? How do you check to see, is it blood work? How do they do that?
Very simple blood test. So you go to the lab, you have a fasting insulin drawn at the same time as a fasting glucose. And then doctors can plug that into the HOMA-IR equation. It's not calculated abnormality, or you can do it yourself actually through the Blood Code website or others that are available to anybody. You can plug in your numbers, and there are differing definitions of who meets the criteria for insulin resistance. But my general rule of thumb that I have felt to be pretty accurate phenotypically with what women are telling me, my patients tell me, is that if your score is less than one, you're probably pretty insulin sensitive and you're not yet impacted by the metabolic syndrome, which is good news. If you're between one and two, you've probably got some early insulin resistance going on. if you're over two, definitely 100%, that is what you are dealing with.
For women who might notice that either they get this test or they're starting to notice a change in their body, what do you suggest as kind of the first steps in this journey of saying, okay, I might be predisposed to this. What should I start doing?
Yeah. So first things first, talk to your doctor and have a full cardiometabolic workup. Because yes, insulin resistance and the metabolic syndrome are associated with unwanted weight gain in menopause. But even more importantly, they're associated with dramatically increased cardiovascular risk. So things like heart attack, stroke, early dementia, right? These are all the big, scary diseases that we as women tend to think of as guys' problems, right? But they actually apply to us. So, you know, I tell women, you know, are you having issues with your memory? Let's make sure there's nothing else that's amiss, right? Let's check your B12 level, your thyroid, all this other stuff. Make sure that nothing is causing a memory concern. If there's cardiovascular disease in the family, let's start with a screening ECG test, an EKG test, right? Let's make sure everything looks good with your heart. Let's have you start walking and see how your body responds. Do you get any symptoms like chest pain or shortness of breath or even abnormal fatigue? Let's get an echocardiogram. Let's look into this a little bit more deeply. So that's number one, is I always want to make sure that we dot the I's and cross the T's with respect to cardiovascular disease. So if a woman does find out that she's insulin resistant and is gaining weight abnormally, there's lots of things that we can do medically. There's lots of things that we can do nutritionally and from a lifestyle perspective. Movement, I hate the word exercise, sorry, but like it's kind of a turn off, right? Like when you hear exercise, it sounds like, gosh, that's so forced. And like, you know, I think about being in a gym, like stuffed into some like spandex thing with people looking at me like, yuck. So daily movement of some kind, of anything that you enjoy, is so, so, so important. Because it increases insulin sensitivity at the level of the muscle. It preserves muscle and bone mass, which comprise our body's lean body mass, and it reduces cortisol levels, right? So all of those stressors that we deal with in menopause, movement can actually be a fantastic way to counteract that. Movement is truly medicine. And it can be yoga, it could be Pilates, it can be simple walking, it can be playing with a pet, it can be the gym, you know, like if you really love the gym, like no knock on that from me. I mean, I'm not a gym rat, so like it just doesn't appeal, but some people absolutely love the gym and the physical challenge. So anything like that is very, very important.
And we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. And we're back.
Nutritionally speaking, focusing on protein as a core part of the diet is very, very, very important, because the protein will help keep your lean body mass. It fuels the muscle, and muscle is our engine that burns extra calories for us. I like to keep carbohydrates mostly in the form of things that are green and high fiber. Yes, spinach is a carbohydrate for sure, but complex carbs, lots of fiber, because that also feeds the gut bacteria that we're learning more and more also play an important role in weight regulation, but also our mood. The gut actually is rich in serotonin, as it turns out, right? So nurturing our gut bacteria in that way, and then choosing healthy fats, because fat and protein don't spike insulin levels the way that carbs and sugar do. And healthy fats, we need them. They keep our brain healthy, right? They're the things that kind of like encase and coat and nourish all of the nervous tissue in our body and in our brain. So we need fat. Fat should not be demonized, but choosing those healthy fats as much as possible. If you're, somebody who eats animal protein, of course, like salmon is kind of the classic fatty fish that can be very, very healthy. If you're vegan, nuts and seeds, flax and chia, avocado are so wonderful as rich sources of healthy fat. So your nutrition can do a lot. Your day-to-day can do a lot. If you're chronically stressed, I have a very low threshold to get people into counseling that is supportive of this life transition. It doesn't mean you're crazy if you need to lean on somebody. And I like to choose and partner with therapists who are particularly knowledgeable of and sympathetic to women who are going through this change of life.
That was going to be one of my questions, the emotional aspect of this, because that is such a tough thing for women. And in this age, you know, the whole media and everything makes you think that you need to look a certain way and that you need to be the certain size. And it's been that way for women since we were born for so long. And that is a really big thing. Comments from other people can really stress you emotionally. So when you said finding a therapist that really understands and goes through that, and that is one thing I found was just when I followed this program, because I've tried different programs and they work for a while and then I gain the weight back. So now I've been, you know, without, it's like it's been about a year. So I'm like, okay, this is really great. And I do find that just the readings and emotional support. Can you talk about the importance more of emotional support in your weight loss journey, if that's something that you're going through?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I also just want to hit on too that you had mentioned, Bridget, that I think we cannot overemphasize enough, that this is not about a matter of appearances or trying to get to a size zero or looking a certain way. I truly believe that we can be physically healthy at a wide variety of shapes and sizes. And it's not necessary to be super skinny to enjoy great health through menopause and also to age in a healthy way. So that is abundantly clear. And the BMI, like I absolutely despise it. You know, it was never even meant to be used for clinical purposes. It was strictly for research purposes. So, you know, I always encourage women to take it with a grain of salt. There are things that are far more important. So in terms of emotional support, I think the role of community is critical. Tapping into resources that normalize what you are going through can be a game changer. You know, whether it's good friends who are all going through the same thing, whether it's, you know, women in your family, like, you know, I mean, if it's your mom or your aunt or an elder sister who has successfully navigated the transition, these folks can be tremendous sources of support. Again, I think the role of therapy can be so critical because, like, you know, gosh, one of the immediate things that I noticed personally, and let me know if this is like TMI, but when I started going through this transition, what I found so mind-boggling is that, like, we're still expected to show up for work every day and put on that brave face, even if we only slept for 30 minutes the night before. And you're just like in a pool of sweat when you're on Zoom. Like, there's really no like acceptable outlet in the workplace for acknowledging what you're going through. And you can feel just like so invalidated by all of that. And so that's where I think therapy can be so tremendously helpful. And also the support of other women and like even this podcast, right? I mean, this is normalizing the experience of menopause that we are all going to go through. And then, you know, the other thing too, that I like to reiterate to women that I work with is that even when you're in your darkest hour and you're struggling the most, the symptoms of menopause will ebb and flow. And eventually they do get better with time. And sometimes just knowing that you're not going to have to live like this forever and ever and ever is reassuring, and I can breathe through it. I'm also a huge fan of mindfulness meditation. I have a daily meditation practice. I think if it's something that you haven't explored, I strongly encourage you to explore it, because you can kind of learn to breathe through a hot flash. Like, while that's happening, you can feel that rising sensation of heat and, you know, explore how it evolves through the body to the point that it just dissipates, and we can learn to let it go a little bit, and it does make a difference.
One of the things, because I walked this journey next to Bridget as she was doing her new programming, so I heard a lot of it. And one of the things that she talked about a lot, and I thought it would be good to explore, is caloric density and healthy food. Bridget talked a lot about how she was trying to avoid calorically dense food. How do you do that and still keep, like, what is considered healthy versus calorically dense?
Yeah, this is a great question. So one of the things that we're actually doing right now at Noom is we're updating and revising quite a bit of this curriculum, because it's been extremely important to me. So you're absolutely right. Nuts, avocado, even many lean proteins are also calorically dense. So we've actually been shifting and working on revising that color system so that women in the perimenopause and menopause can include more healthy proteins, more sources of fat, which are rich in vitamins and minerals and other nutrients, while still not breaking the bank on caloric density. So that is all undergoing right now in progress. So if you're a current Noom user, you are going to start to see some very, very big changes in the coming weeks and months. And I'm very excited about it.
Do you have any suggestions for women to just maybe not be so hard on themselves, and that it really, don't expect a miracle overnight? Any suggestions in that area?
Yeah, I mean, that's like a $1 million question. And I think, you know, our expectations of ourselves and what we like should do and should achieve is something that I encounter with women all the time. You know, we're expected to be perfect. We're expected to get that gold star at the end of the day. But what's so important is to really understand that everyone's journey is quite different. Even if you're using medications, you know, and like, that's a whole nother, you know, of course, discussion topic is, you know, the new highly effective anti-obesity medicines that everybody's talking about. So even if you're using medications, everyone's journey is different. Everyone's path is unique, and everyone's body is going to respond very, very differently. And, you know, one of the most common questions that I get is, why am I losing so slowly? Or the variation on that, why did I just lose 10 pounds and now I'm gaining it back? Right? So the first and most important thing to understand is that weight gain, right, and your body fighting against weight loss is completely natural. You know, we are animals. We are human animals. And we evolved to do three things very well, which is to sleep, to reproduce, and to conserve our fat stores. You know, it's like I tell people, like, back in the cavewoman days, we couldn't just go to the Starbucks drive-through or Wendy's or whatever it is to get our nutrients. You know, we had to climb trees and we had to pick berries and we had to hunt antelopes and, you know, all this other stuff. So our bodies got really good at conserving our fat stores. So in response to us making healthier changes, guess what? A process called metabolic adaptation is going to kick in, and it is going to fight you every single step of the way. There's nothing wrong with you. You're not doing anything wrong. This is natural. This is your body. So Having said that, you know, important things to keep in mind, of course, is that, like, let's say somebody's taking a weight loss medication. It's critical to know, like you just said, it's not a quick fix. It's not going to drive weight loss alone, and it's not going to prevent weight gain alone, right? There's a phenomenon in medicine called tachyphylaxis. And essentially what that means is your body finding a way around whatever medicine you're taking to make the effect of the medicine less powerful. Very nice, right? So having said that too, of course, in the Noom program, you know, we always tell people, check in with your mood, your stress, your sleep. Are you tracking? What's your nutrition been like? Are you traveling? What have your social interactions been like? All of these things are very, very, very important. And, you know, besides that too, like I mentioned before, I always tell women who are struggling or feel like they're having a very hard time, check in with your clinician. Is there something medical going on that we need to uncover that could be making this fight extra difficult? And if so, we can help.
I'm curious about your thoughts on the recent research on intermittent fasting and cardiac issues. Are you familiar with that? And what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, fascinating question. So overall, one big thing to keep in mind when you look at this nutritional research, most of it is performed based on a technique called food frequency questionnaires. So it's asking people to fill out questionnaires, what they ate on different days, going back, like looking back weeks, months, sometimes even years. So a lot of this research is fundamentally kind of flawed, you know, because it's hard to remember. I don't know about you. I don't even know what I ate yesterday anymore, right? I mean, like, I couldn't tell you, like, how many hours did I eat or not eat 2 weeks ago on a Wednesday? I have no idea. I mean, I can tell you maybe some general patterns, but other than that, I don't really know. When it comes to metabolic health and improving insulin resistance, lots and lots of data exists that will say the opposite, right? That intermittent fasting actually helps improve insulin resistance and improve metabolic health, which in and itself helps reduce your risk of cardiovascular problems. So I think these two different bodies of research are really kind of in direct conflict with each other. And I think more work is really needed to dig through why. I mean, physiologically speaking, I don't know why intermittent fasting would lead you to have more cardiac events. Like, it doesn't intuitively make sense to me. But that being said, I'm excited to see what other research we're able to do on this topic and, you know, get some more clarity for folks, because I do find that many of my menopausal women just love intermittent fasting because it's not like you need to buy anything special. It's not like you really need to do all that much different. You're just kind of shortening your eating window a little bit. And given that we know menopausal women get more insulin resistant, any way to fight against that can be super helpful.
One more thing I want to talk about, and for me, it was so funny when I started this program. I was so bad about weighing. I hate it to weigh that I would go to the doctor and step on the scales backwards. And I would tell them, don't tell me, write it down for your records, but, you know, don't tell me what I weigh. And that was the first thing for me was like, oh, you've got to weigh every day. My sister would tell me, they want you to. It's not like a rule. Nobody's going to come in and arrest you if you don't weigh every day. But she's like, oh, you weigh? And I was like, oh, you weigh every day? And I was like, I've just got to do this. And so it's funny now, I am so good about, okay, I'm just going to weigh every day. And I think it was great in the talks and the little readings that you do, where it said, so you might gain weight one day, you might gain a pound one day. Right. And there was like the, oh, well part. Well, oh, well. And then you know, I never thought that I would find that helpful, but it has been so helpful. Is there, could, is there a reason? I think for me, it was just psychological and keeps it on track. But right. What do you find by weighing every day?
And how can you not get obsessed? Because I know a lot of people get upset. Oh, I gained 7 ounces and what am I going to do?
Yeah. Well, a few things I'll say about the daily weighing, because I totally get that. I mean, I think a lot of us have very negative associations with the scale. The scale has felt like it really hasn't been a friend. It hasn't been kind to us, you know? I think for many of us, that scale just symbolizes the judgment that we face. The judgment that we face over our appearance, our competence, you know, as women. And it's a tough thing. It really, really is. So I'll say a few things. You know, Noom's recommendation to weigh in regularly comes from very well-established data through the National Weight Control Registry, which is an enormous database of individuals in the United States who have successfully kept off significant amounts of weight for, like, I believe it's like a 10-year period. And so their habits were all queried, and this makes up this large body of data that we go by. And daily weighing is top on the list of the people who have maintained a 30-pound or greater weight loss. Same with daily movement, top of the list, right? Some type of eating modification also is high on the list. Not exactly like, oh, only eating X amount of calories a day or following a Mediterranean diet or a keto diet or whatever. No, it doesn't get that granular, but some type of eating modification. So that's where that comes from. And Noom, you know, I think as being a science-based company, has always followed the science. And it's kind of like you said, Bridget, I think the aim in the daily weighing is to take all that emotional baggage associated with that scale out of the equation. You know, you gain a pound, okay, big deal. You lose a pound, big deal. How are you feeling? You know, like, how are you feeling overall about your journey? Now, that being said, I have had many patients who, for whatever reason, they just cannot, like, they cannot get past it. That's fine. There's other ways that they can engage through the Noom app. They can track activity. They can track lessons, you know, such as the menopause curriculum module or whatever it is they wish to do. You know, they can track other activities like meditation or yoga. So you're not forced to, but it is encouraged based on all the available data that we have.
Are there certain things that are top of your list that we should try to either avoid eating or perhaps avoid doing or lessen the frequency of to help with this metabolic syndrome?
Yeah, great question, Colleen. I love it when people can minimize their intake of processed sugars and carbohydrates as much as possible. It just does nothing for our bodies at all. And it's very common sense, right? I mean, you know, these highly processed foods not only fill us up with empty sugar and calories, they are powerful triggers of the craving and reward center in our brain and lead us to crave even more. And they can foster that hamster wheel cycle of weight gain that bolsters up the visceral fat tissue, which puts our health tremendously at risk. The other thing, you know, that I talk about sometimes, and this is going to maybe be a little unpopular, but it's nice if you can also minimize your alcohol. I think, you know, to cope with the stress, it is not unusual to see women like having that glass of wine every night with dinner, or maybe 2 glasses or maybe 3 over time, especially to try to combat the sleep issues. You know, like many people think, okay, I just need to relax. I need to get rid of the pressures of the day and I need to get sleepy, for gosh sakes, you know, like, please help me. So I think, you know, a lot of us turn to alcohol to help with that. Again, it can be a source of empty sugars and carbohydrates. it can also disinhibit our brains from choosing things that will help us feel better overall, you know, be it a walk in the park or, you know, eating a protein-rich meal that gives us energy for the day or, you know, something else like that. So I think like minimizing to social occasions can be very, very helpful for some women. And of course, no alcohol right before bedtime. You know, the other thing to look into too, speaking of sleep, is that besides just the hot flashes and the anxiety, which can disrupt our sleep, another little known fact is that in the menopause, many more women are at risk for sleep apnea and don't know it. And this is something that can really creep up on you and interfere with the quality of your sleep. So I tell women to consider a sleep study all the time. Ask your doctor for a sleep study. Make sure there's nothing going on like sleep apnea or restless legs or another sleep cycle disorder. Because listen, anything we can do to improve our sleep, we should diagnose it and we should treat it.
Thank you so much for coming on today. I'm really thrilled to talk to you, and I'm thrilled with how this has worked out for me. And thank you so much for being on today.
It has been my absolute pleasure, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Dr. Linda, for that interesting conversation. We hope you guys learned a lot, and you can always email us with any of your questions at hotflashescooltopics@gmail.com. The show notes will be up on our website. That's hotflashescooltopics.com. And also, if you want to see the video, because these videos are really cool to watch, we have them up on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel, Hot Flashes and Cool Topics. We are just about, I don't know, a little more than a dozen away from getting 1,000 people to follow. So if you could just do us a little favor and go run over to YouTube. You don't have to run. You can walk. Walk over to YouTube and just press the subscribe link for us and take a peek at these episodes. I think we have like 200 episodes on there or something. It's crazy. And just follow us so that you'll never miss an episode either on Apple or Spotify or our website or videos on YouTube. You can also check us out in all forms of social media because we're there and you can follow us as well. We hope you guys have the best week. Don't forget to check out tickets for Conversations with Prime Women. The event is in New York City on April 27th and tickets can be found at eventbrite.com or on our website, conversationswithprimewomen.com. That was a lot of information. I hope I didn't say it too fast, but guys, have a great week and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.